Lecture 4 from Staying Connected, Selected Talks and Meditations by Rudolf Steiner. This fourth lecture is called The Presence of the Dead, given in Paris, May 25th, 1914, and the overview of it. Our dreams and our contact with the dead have in common the absence of a subjective sense of ourself, or I, and the absence of our sense of touch. Like the world of dreams, the world in which we encounter the dead is not a world of things, but primarily a world of images. There we are not outside, but inside what we perceive. We fuse with beings of the spiritual world. Occasionally those who have died appear as they did in life. More often, however, they take on the form of another person. If we allow our feelings to penetrate this image, we can begin to sense the underlying meaning. This is a kind of reading in which we go beyond underlying meaning to the cognitive essence. It is a different kind of reading. In the world of waking consciousness, we perceive things, objects, but in the other world, we have to become accustomed to the feeling of being perceived, the feeling of presences perceiving us. We must become aware of their spiritual gaze resting upon us, and not just resting, but acting and giving us strength. To experience this, we must develop a specific kind of selflessness and the capacity to love objectively, not subjectively, out of personal needs. If we can do this, we will experience the gaze of a loved one who has died as a warm mildness. But if we cannot, we shall experience a piercing, burning sensation. What we feel tells us who is with us. This is true of all spiritual beings. Esoteric training reveals this world of beings, as, for instance, the world of living and weaving thoughts, the world of the angels, and the next world, and the world of the archangels. There, too, we can encounter the astral bodies of those we have loved as great cosmic paintings. If we remain selfish and unloving, however, we release luciferic and Ahrimanic beings. The presence of the dead. What happens to our soul when it becomes clairvoyant can be compared with our dreams, which are like a surrogate clairvoyance. When we dream, we live in a world of images, which contains nothing of what we call the, quote, sensation of touching an object outside us, unquote. In our dreams, there is usually nothing we can compare with normal eye consciousness. If any aspect of our eye does appear in our dreams, it seems to be separate from us, almost like another being outside us. We face our eye like a separate entity. Thus we can speak of a doubling of the eye. However, in dreams, we perceive only the part of ourselves that has separated, not the subjective eye. All statements apparently contradicting what I have just said can be traced to the fact that most people know of their dreams only from memory and cannot remember that in the actual dream the subjective eye was extinguished. The images of clairvoyant research resemble dreams, because in both of them the subjective eye and the sense of touch are absent. A clairvoyant recalling his or her experiences must feel that the clairvoyant reality is permeable and, unlike physical objects, offers no resistance to touch. In the physical world we have eye awareness, because we know I am here. The object is outside me. However, in clairvoyant perception, we are inside the object, not separated from what we perceive. Consequently, individual objects are not fixed and distinct like physical ones, but are in continuous movement and transformation. Objects in the physical world are fixed because we can touch them and because they offer us boundaries, which objects of clairvoyant perception do not have. The same thing that causes our eye to fuse with the objects of clairvoyant perception also forces us to be very careful when we encounter in the physical world what we call another eye, another human being. Let us first look at what happens when, through our clairvoyant faculties, we encounter a person who has died. Such an encounter can come about when the figure of the deceased approaches us in clairvoyant perception, like a very vivid dream image, looking every bit as we remember the person looked in life. However, this is not the usual type of such encounters, but a rare exception. Another possibility is that we clairvoyantly perceive a dead person who has taken on the form of either a living or another dead individual, and thus does not appear in his or her own form. The appearance of the deceased, then, is of very little relevance in identifying the individuality. Perhaps we were particularly fond of another dead person, or have a particularly close relationship with a living one. The deceased approaching us can then take on the form of either of those other individuals. In other words, we lack all the usual means of identifying the I and appearance of a person in the physical world. It will help us find our way to remember that the appearance or form is not at all important. A being is meeting us in one form or another, and we need to note what this being does. If we take our time and carefully observe the image before us, we will realize that based on everything we know about the individual in question, If we take our time and carefully observe the image before us, we will realize that, based on everything we know about, the individual in question could not act the way this image is acting in the clairvoyant sphere. The actions are totally out of character. We will often encounter a contradiction between how the person we knew, whose image appears before us, acted, and how the image acts. If we allow our feelings to accompany these actions, ignoring the individual's appearance, we will get a sense in the depths of our soul telling us what being we are actually dealing with. Let me repeat that we are guided by a feeling that rises up from the depths of our soul, for that is very important. The individual's appearance in the clairvoyant sphere seems to resemble a physical figure, but can be as different from the being really present as the symbols for the word house are from the actual house. Since we can read, we do not concentrate on the symbols that make up the word house and do not describe the shape of the letters, but instead get right to the concept, house. In the same way, we learn in true clairvoyance to move from the figure we perceive to the actual being. That is why we speak of reading the occult script in the true sense of the word. That is, we move inwardly and actively from the vision to the reality it expresses, just as written words express a reality. How can we develop this ability to go beyond the appearance, the immediate vision? We do so above all by looking at new ideas and concepts we will need if we want to understand the clairvoyant sphere. New, that is, in contrast to the ideas we use in the physical world. In the physical world, we look at an object or a being and say quite rightly, I perceive that being, that object. We perceive the plant, mineral, and animal kingdoms, the realm of physical human beings, as well as clouds, mountains, rivers, stars, sun and moon. The feeling expressed in the words, I perceive, undergoes a transformation when we enter the clairvoyant sphere. Let me try to explain this with an analogy, though it may sound simplistic. If you were a plant, how would you relate to people perceiving you? If this plant had consciousness and could speak, it would have to say, people look at me, I am perceived by them. Of course, we say, I perceive the plant, but at its level of consciousness, the plant would have to say that it was perceived by human beings. It is this feeling of being perceived, being looked at, that we must acquire in relation to the beings of the clairvoyant sphere. For example, concerning the beings of the first hierarchy, the angels, we must be aware that, strictly speaking, it is not correct to say, I perceive an angel. Instead, we have to say, I feel an angel perceiving me. Based on our Copernican worldview, we know full well that the sun does not move. Nevertheless, we say that it rises and moves across the sky, thus contradicting our better knowledge. Similarly, in everyday language, we can say that we see an angel, but that is not the truth. We would actually have to say that we feel ourselves seen or perceived by an angel. If we said we experience the being of an angel or a dead person and can feel it, we would speak the truth from the clairvoyant point of view. Perhaps an example from clairvoyant observation will help you understand this. More than 10 years ago, at the beginning of our work with spiritual science, a dear friend of ours worked with us for a short time. Her name was footnote, Maria Strauch Spettini, 1847 to 1904. This individual possessed not only enthusiasm for what we could give her in the early stages of spiritual science, but also a profound artistic sensitivity and understanding. One could not help but love her, a love that may well be described as objective because of her qualities. Having worked with us for a relatively short time and having learned a great deal about the results of spiritual science, she left the physical world. There is no need to go into the next 4 or 5 years after her death, so let me get directly to what happened after that. In 1909, we presented our mystery plays in Munich, preceded, to our great delight, by Children of Lucifer, by our highly respected friend Edward Charest. Footnote, Edward Charest, born in Strasbourg in 1841, was an early esoteric student of Steiner's. Whatever you may think about the way the plays were produced then and later, we had to present them the way we did. The circumstances under which we had to work on the performances were such that we needed an impulse from the spiritual world, an impulse that also included the artistic aspect we wanted to incorporate. Now, I can assure you that even at that time, in 1909, and even more so in later years, I always felt a specific spiritual impulse as I was working on the arrangements for the performances. You see, when we have work to do in the physical world, we need not only intellect and skills, but also the strength of our muscles. Our muscles help us objectively. They are given to us, unlike the intellectual capacities we ourselves dwell in. Now, in dealing with matters of the spirit, we need forces from the spiritual world to combine with our own, just as we need the strength of our muscles for physical action. In the case I mentioned, the impulse from the individual who had left the physical world in 1904 entered more and more into our artistic work on the Munich plays. To describe what happened, I would have to say the impulses from this individual came down from the spirit plane and flowed into my intentions, into my work. She was the patron of our work. We develop the right feelings toward the dead if we become aware of their spiritual gaze, if I may use that expression, and their powers focus on us. They look at us, act in us, and add to our strength. To experience such a spiritual fact in the right way, we need to develop a very specific type of selflessness and a capacity for love. That is why I stress that one should love people objectively, as it were, because of their qualities. One must love them because they were as they were. A subjective love, a love arising out of personal needs, can easily be egotistical and can potentially keep us from finding the right relationship to such a dead individual. The difference between the right love, the selfless love we have for such a person, and selfish love becomes perfectly obvious in clairvoyant experience. Let us assume a person like the one mentioned would want to help us after her death, but we cannot develop true selfless love for her. Her spiritual gaze, her spiritual will streaming toward us, would then be like a burning sensation, causing a piercing, burning feeling in our soul. If we can feel and maintain a selfless love, this stream, her spiritual gaze, as it were, flows into our soul like a feeling of warm mildness and pours itself into our thoughts, imagination, feeling, and willing. It is out of this feeling that we recognize who the dead person is and not on the basis of his or her appearance, because the dead may manifest in the guise of a person we feel close to at the moment. The form in which the beings of the higher world appear to us, and after death we are all beings of a higher spiritual world, depends on our subjective nature, on what we habitually see, think, and feel. The reality is what we feel for the being manifest before us and how we receive what comes to us from this being. Regardless of what Joan of Arc said about the appearance of the higher beings in her visions, the spiritual researcher able to investigate these things knows that it was always the genius of the French nation that stood behind them. I described how we can feel the gaze of spiritual beings resting upon us and their will flowing into our souls. To learn this is analogous to learning to read on the physical plane. Those who merely want to describe their visions would be like people describing the shape of the letters on a page rather than their meaning. This shows you how easy it is to have preconceived notions about the experiences in the spiritual realm. Naturally, it seems most obvious to attach great importance to this description of what the vision looked like. However, what really matters is what lies behind the veil of perception and is expressed in the images of the vision. Thus, in the course of occult development, the soul immerses itself in specific moods and inner states different from those of our everyday life. We have entered the world of the hierarchy of angels, and the hierarchy, we could also say hierarchies, of the dead, as soon as our occult exercises have brought us to the stage where the sense of touch characteristic of the physical world no longer exists, and where a person's appearance is no longer characteristic of the eye concerned. Then our thinking changes, and we no longer have thoughts in the sense we have them here in the physical world. In that world, every thought takes on the form of an elemental being. In the physical world, our thoughts can agree or contradict each other. In this other world we enter, thoughts encounter other thoughts as real beings, either loving or hating each other. We begin to feel our way into a world of many thought beings. And in those living thought beings, we really feel what we usually call, quote-unquote, life. Here life and thinking are united, whereas they are completely separate in the physical world. When we speak on the physical plane and tell our thoughts to someone, we have the feeling that our thoughts come from our soul, that we have to remember them at this particular moment. Speaking as a true occultist and not someone who just tells his or her experiences from memory, we will feel that our thoughts arise as living beings. We must be glad if we are blessed at the right moment with the approach of a thought as a real being. When you express your thoughts in the physical world, for example, as a lecturer, you will find it easier to give a talk for the 30th time than you found it the first time. If, however, you speak as an occultist, thoughts always have to approach you and then depart again. Just as someone paying you the 30th visit had to come to you 30 times, the living thought we express for the 30th time has to come to us 30 times as it did the first time. Our memory is of absolutely no use here. If you express an idea on the physical level and someone is sitting in a corner thinking, "I don't like that nonsense, I hate it," you will not be particularly bothered by it. You have prepared your ideas and present them regardless of the positive and negative thoughts of someone in the audience. But if, as an esotericist, you let thoughts approach you, they could be delayed and kept away by someone who hates them or hates the speaker. And the forces blocking that thought must be overcome because we are dealing with living beings and not merely with abstract ideas. These two examples show that as soon as we enter the sphere of clairvoyance, we are immersed in living and weaving thoughts. It is as if the thoughts are no longer subjective, and as if you yourself are no longer within yourself, as if you are living outside in the wide world. When you are in this world of living and weaving thoughts, you are in the hierarchy of angels. And just as our physical world is everywhere filled with air, the world of the hierarchy of angels is filled with the mild warmth I spoke about earlier, which the beings of this hierarchy pour out. When our inner development has brought us to the stage where we can live in this spiritual atmosphere of streaming mildness, we feel the spiritual eyes of the hierarchy of angels resting on our souls. Now, in our earthly life, we have certain ideals and think about them abstractly. As we think of them, we feel obligated to pursue these ideals. In the clairvoyant sphere, however, there are no abstract ideals. Their ideals are living beings of the hierarchy of angels and flow through spiritual space, looking at us with warmth. In the physical world, we may have ideals and know them well, and yet we may not do anything to apply them. Our emotions and perhaps passions can tempt us to shirk them. However, if we spiritually ignore an ideal in the clairvoyant sphere, we feel the spiritual gaze of a being of the hierarchy of angels directed at us with reproach, and this reproach burns. In the spiritual world, ignoring an ideal is thus a reality, and a being of the hierarchy of angels approaches us, reproaches us. Their gaze makes us feel the reproach. It is the reproach we feel. You see, learning to develop a real feeling for ideals is one way of entering the world of the hierarchy of angels. Limiting our consciousness to the physical plane may lead us to think that nothing will happen if we are too lazy to act on our ideals. However, we can learn to feel that if we do not act on an ideal, then regardless of other consequences, the world becomes different from what it would have been had we followed our ideal. We are on the way to the hierarchy of angels when we begin to see that not acting on our ideals is something real, and when we can transform this insight into a genuine feeling. Transforming and vitalizing our feelings allows our souls to grow into the higher worlds. Through continued esoteric training, we can rise to an even higher level, that of the hierarchy of archangels. If we ignore the angels, we feel reproach. With the archangels, we feel reproach as well as a real effect on our being. The strength and power of the archangels works through our eye when we live in their world. For example, a few months ago, we lost a very dear friend when he left the physical plane. Footnote: Rudolf Steiner is referring here to the poet and translator of Ibsen, Strindberg, and Hamsun, Christian Morgenstern, 1871 to 1914. A profound poet, he had quickly found his way into the anthroposophical worldview in the last 5 years, and the feelings it evoked in him are beautifully reflected in his recent poetry. From the time he joined us, and even before that, he had been struggling with an infirm and deteriorating body. The more his body deteriorated, the more his soul was filled with poetry that reflected our worldview. Only a short time has elapsed since his death, so one cannot yet say that this individual possesses a clearly existing consciousness. Nevertheless, the first stages of his development in the existence after death can be seen. The astral body, now separated from the physical and living in the spiritual world, reveals the most wonderful tableaus of cosmic development as we understand it in spiritual science. Having left the deteriorated physical body, the astral body has become so illuminated, comparatively speaking, that it can present the clairvoyant observer with a complete picture of cosmic evolution. Let me use an analogy to explain what I mean. We can love nature and admire it, and still appreciate a beautiful painting that recreates what we have seen in nature. Similarly, we can be uplifted when what we have seen in the clairvoyant sphere lights up again as a cosmic painting, so to speak, in the astral body of a person who has died. The astral body of our departed friend reveals after death what it absorbed, at first unconsciously, but later also consciously, in the course of his anthroposophical development, when the beings of the hierarchy of archangels worked actively on the poetical transformation of his anthroposophical thoughts and ideas. Our progress in our esoteric development can be called mystical, because it is initially the inner progress of the soul. We transform our ordinary personality and gradually reach a new state. This step-by-step growth of the soul is mystical progress, because at first it is experienced inwardly. As soon as we can perceive the mildness looking down from the spiritual world, we are objectively in the world of the angels, which reveals itself to us. And as soon as we can recognize that real forces of strength and power enter us, we are in the realm of the archangels. With each stage of inner mystical progress, we have to enter another world. However, if we fail to develop selflessness and reach the stage of living in the world of the angels while remaining selfish and unloving, then we carry the self intended for the physical world into their realm. Instead of feeling the mild gaze and will of the angels upon us, we feel that other spiritual powers are able to ascend through us. Instead of gazing at us from outside, they have been released by us, shall we say, from their underworld, while we were raised to a higher world. Instead of being overshadowed or rather illuminated by the world of the angels, we experience the luciferic beings that emerge from us. Then, if we reach the stage of mystical development that allows us to enter the world of the archangels, but without having first developed the wish to receive by grace the influences of the spiritual world, we carry ourself up into their realm. As a result, instead of being strengthened and imbued with the power of the archangels, the beings of the Aramanic world emerge from us and surround us. At first glance, the idea that the world of Lucifer appears in the realm of the angels and the world of Ahriman in that of the archangels seems terrible. However, there is really nothing awful about this. Lucifer and Ahriman are, in any case, higher beings than we are. Lucifer can be described as an archangel left behind at an earlier stage of evolution. Ahriman is a spirit of personality also left behind at an earlier stage. Footnote. For more about Lucifer and Ahriman, see Rudolf Steiner, Evil, Selected Lectures, London, Rudolf Steiner Press, 1997. Also Lucifer and Ahriman, North Vancouver, Canada, Steiner Book Center, 1976. The terrible thing is not that we encounter Lucifer and Ahriman, but that we encounter them without recognizing them for who they are. Encountering Lucifer in the world of the angels really means encountering the spirit of beauty, the spirit of freedom. But the all-important thing is that we recognize Lucifer and his hosts as soon as we enter the world of the angels. The same is true of Ahriman in the realm of the archangels. Unleashing Lucifer and Ahriman in the higher worlds is terrible only if we do not recognize them as we release them, because then they control us without our knowledge. It is important that we face them consciously. When we have advanced in our mystical development to the level of living in the world of the angels and want to continue there with really fruitful occultism, we have to look for Lucifer as soon as we expect the spiritual gaze of the angels to rest on us. Lucifer must be present, and if we cannot find him, he is within us. But it is very important that Lucifer is outside us in this realm so that we can face him. These facts about Lucifer and Ahriman, angels and archangels, explain the nature of revelation in the higher worlds. From our viewpoint in the physical world, we are easily led to believe that Lucifer and Ahriman are evil powers. But when we enter the higher world, this no longer has any meaning. In the clairvoyant sphere, Lucifer and Ahriman have to be present just as much as the angels and archangels. However, we do not perceive them the same way. We identify the angels and archangels not by their appearance, but by the mildness that flows into us from the angels and the strength and power that flow into our feeling and willing from the archangels if we allow it. Lucifer and Ahriman appear to us as figures, merely transposed into the spiritual world. We cannot touch them, but we can approach them as spiritual projections of the physical world. Clearly, it is important that we learn in our mystical clairvoyant development to see forms in the higher world and to be aware that we are seen, that a higher will focuses on us. You see, higher development does not consist merely in acquiring clairvoyant faculties, but in developing a certain state of soul, a certain attitude or relationship to the beings of the higher world. This new attitude and state of soul must be developed hand in hand with the training of our clairvoyant faculties. In other words, we must learn not only to see in the spiritual world, but also to read in it. Reading is not meant here in the narrow sense of a simple learning process, but as something we acquire through transforming our feelings and sensations. It is important to keep in mind that a split of our personality occurs when clairvoyance begins and we attain a revelation of the higher worlds. Our earthly personality is left behind, and a new one is acquired upon ascending into a higher world. And just as the beings of the higher hierarchies look at us in a higher world, so we perceive our own ordinary personality from a higher perspective. Our higher self discards the lower one and observes it. So to make valid statements about the higher worlds, we can better wait until we are able to say, "That is you, the person you see in your clairvoyant vision is yourself." Quote, "That is you," unquote, on the higher level, corresponds to, quote, "This is I," quote, unquote, on the physical one. Now remember when you were 8 or 13 or 15 years old, and try to reconstruct from your memory a small part of your life at that time. Try to recall as vividly as possible your thinking in those years. Then concentrate on your current feelings about the girl or boy you were at 8, 13, or 15. As soon as we move from the physical level to the higher world, the present moment we live in now becomes a memory of the kind we have just recalled. We look back at our current existence on the physical level and at what we may still become during the remainder of our physical life in the same way you look back to your experiences at 8, 13, or 15 from your vantage point in the present moment. Everything we consider part of ourselves on the physical level, such as our feelings, thoughts, ideas, and actions, becomes a memory as soon as we enter the higher world. We look down at the physical world and become a memory to ourselves when we live in the higher world. We have to keep our experiences in the higher world separate from those in the physical realm, just as we distinguish between our present situation and an earlier one. Imagine a 40-year-old person who vividly remembers the feelings and abilities he or she had as an 8-year-old boy or girl. For instance, the person might be reading a book now at the age of 40, and all of a sudden begin to relate to the book as an 8-year-old would. That would be a confusion of the two attitudes, the two states of soul, and is analogous to what happens when we confuse our state of soul on the physical level with what is required in the higher worlds. Of course, this has nothing to do with the fact that every unbiased person can understand what I say about the higher worlds. In other words, you do not have to believe these descriptions because you can understand them if you approach them without preconceived ideas. People may object that we cannot describe the higher worlds with concepts, thoughts, and ideas from the physical world because the former are completely different from the latter. This objection makes as much sense as saying that we cannot give people an idea of what we mean by writing house, that for them to understand that concept, we have to bring them a house. We talk about physical facts and objects by means totally independent of the object or fact, so we can also describe phenomena of the spiritual world with what we understand on the physical plane. However, we cannot understand the higher worlds with our everyday concepts and ideas, but need to acquire others and expand our thinking. People who honestly tell us about the higher world must also extend our concepts beyond our everyday life. They must give us concepts that are new and different and yet comprehensible on the physical plane. People find it difficult to understand genuine spiritual science and serious esotericism because they are so reluctant to expand their concepts. They want to understand the higher world and its revelations with the ideas they already have and don't want to create new ones. When people in our materialistic age hear lectures on the spiritual world, they believe all too easily that the esoteric world can be understood simply by looking at it. They think the shapes there may be slightly more delicate and more nebulous than in the physical world, but similar nevertheless. It may seem inconvenient to some that the serious occultist is expected to do more than merely follow instructions on how to see angels. A change in thinking is necessary, and the concept angel must include that we are perceived by them, that their spiritual gaze is focused on us. Mystical development, or ascending to the higher worlds, cannot be separated from enriching and giving greater scope to our ideas, feelings, and soul impulses. To understand the higher worlds, we must not let our life of ideas remain as impoverished as it is on the physical plane. The end of Lecture 4.